Welcome to the Humans and AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Hi, Mini. Very nice to meet you. Thanks for joining the Humans and AI podcast. I appreciate you make time for this, so let's dive into it. So, well, right now you are the founder and the CEO of Cognitos that we will talk more in depth after. It's a very interesting thing that you are doing, actually, I have to say. I've never heard something like this before. But before, I would like to go to the beginning of your personal and career, the journey of all this. So you said that everything started because you have the conviction that humans shouldn't have to think like machines. But my question is, you were saying, why should humans need to think like machines when machines cannot think like humans?
Yeah, thank you, Flor. Thanks for the time, and also thanks to people who are taking the time to listen into our conversation. I have been a software engineer all my life, more than 3 decades coding and basically speaking the language of the machine. I've learned many different programming languages over the years. And it was during the pandemic when I was reflecting back at what I have been doing. And Alexa was there, Siri was there, and some conversations with my son made me realize that maybe it is time to rethink all of computer science. Computer science is a science where we have been learning how to speak to the machine. And then the question came to my mind is, if machines are going to be able to understand humans, then maybe we just need to redo it again. How do we speak to machines? And I just got the conviction that given the trajectory of where AI is going, we might be able to see that future. I thought it'll take maybe 10 years. And I was happy to just jump in and spend the rest of my career on making sure that happens, with the idea of bringing in a lot more people into the fold of this dark art of telling a computer what to do. According to me, we are still in the dark ages of computer science because only 30 million people can speak to a machine and tell it what to do. I wanted to change that. So everybody should be able to do that. So happy to be here, and now we are in a world where that seems to be going to be a reality pretty soon. So it's awesome.
Yeah, Cognitos, you guys, yeah, there's something very important, like interesting and important, I think, as well, because you're using natural language like English as code. So it's kind of not only programmers can code now, it's just even myself, I'm not a programmer, could code with a Cognitos. So you guys, automating business process with natural language as English as code. So I found it very interesting. You said that, for example, what do you think that if you had Cognitos in the beginning of your career, do you think that would be make it easier for you? Or in that point, you didn't have it, but now knowing that you just built this, imagine that exists something before. How did it influence in your career right now?
Correct. Ever since I was a teenager, I've always been dreaming about, like, maybe one day computers will just understand natural language. We were taught very early in our computer science classes that before you write a program, first think about the structure of the program, think about algorithms, and then write down in English your plan. We were taught pseudocode. And I've always wondered, why do I have to now go do a translation? And that is the hard part. And also, when there are exceptions or bugs in the code, then debugging is hard. Now, I've gotten pretty comfortable and experienced with debugging software. But I've always felt that it's a foreign language that needs to be somehow fixed. Yeah, if I had Cognitos in the beginning of my career, I would only use natural language to code. That was my dream, that one day that would happen. And back when I was small, I used to think it's all about knowledge representation in graphs in the brain, and that was wrong. But now with LLMs, we've figured out a very good way of mimicking what the human brain does. So it's fascinating. We are at a point in time when when computers were thought about originally, those dreams that people had will actually be possible. Imagine Alan Turing in the 1930s came up with the Turing test and came up with the thought that one day computers will be indistinguishable from humans. So even before computers were invented, Alan Turing had the vision that they will be indistinguishable. Therefore, they'll be understanding natural language. Then when the first few programming languages were created, like COBOL was common business-oriented language. It was supposed to be very close to natural language. And Prolog, and there were a bunch of folks who really wanted to do it, but finally gave up because the compute was not there, the technology wasn't there. And then we went into this era, maybe 50 years of computer programming languages that were very mathematical and not natural. And now we have an opportunity of just getting back and then redoing everything. And if you ask me, whatever I have learned in computer science, how much will be relevant in this new era? I would say maybe 10%. And the rest we have to unlearn. I talk to my developers and say, unlearn, think like a non-developer. Because only when we think like a non-developer, we will be able to build the future. A lot of the AI startups today, even when we are saying, let's do vibe coding and let's generate software, that's wrong. When I talk to a human, I don't generate Python. And then talk to a human, I don't generate code, period. And so there's a mindset difference that we need to get into. So it will be hard transition for the computer science folks, but it's a super easy transition for the non-computer science folks. Now, you said one thing, that you're not a programmer. I disagree. You're not a software developer. But you know what? The word programming predates computer science. Like any graduate program, a wedding program, a recipe for making apple pie is a program. The fact that if you look up dictionary, program will have two definitions. One is a computer science thing, which is a fairly new definition. And the original definition of a program is a step-by-step process for a human to follow to achieve a goal. Every human is a programmer. Because if you ask them, hey, how do I go to the store from here? They'll say, okay, go straight, turn right. They're programming. They can think that way. So we believe that there are a billion programmers out there if the computer can understand natural language. So that's what's really exciting.
Well, Bini, actually, you're right. Yeah, we always think that programming is something related with technology and software and things, but it's sometimes we just put it so much into the context of technology that we forgot that we actually, most of the things that we do with technology, we do it ourselves, like in a normal daily life. That's such a very interesting insight there. So you describe generative AI as the new electricity. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's also getting cliched, but what do I mean by that? So fundamentally, electricity in itself isn't the change that everybody feels. It's actually the appliances that electricity runs that actually changes people's lives. So just if I give somebody 110 volts and 50 amperes, what can they do with it? With AI, people are feeling the same thing. Okay, so you gave me this fire hose of GPT or Claude or whatever, and it's getting more and more powerful. So voltage is increasing, amperage is increasing, but please tell me how to use it. Some people are worried that if I connect this electricity in my office, then maybe there'll be fires, right? That's the same kind of thing. The idea that we have at Cognitus is we would like to bring in the power of AI, just like folks like General Electric brought in the power of electricity through appliances to everybody. Now, when you think about appliances, there are different kinds of appliances. There'll be small appliances, there'll be light bulb, and there'll be a refrigerator, and there can be huge appliances as well. Now, what makes the appliance successful? One is it solves a pain point for the customer. It's not selling electricity. Appliance doesn't say, look, I boast that I can use this much electricity. No, it just does the job, which before electricity was manual, now it will be automated. So that's exactly the analogy there. But even more things to learn about that from the electricity era. Not all appliances run on 110 volts or 220 volts. Some run on 5 volts. So we do not need the most powerful AI for everything. So we have to lower the power of AI to make, why is 5 volts there? To make it safe. It cannot create a fire. So what do batteries do? 1.5 volts. There's a lot to learn from that analogy. It's not just an analogy in terms of like how revolutionary it will be, but more about how can we create safety around it. So electricity, when it comes into a house, there is insulation on every wire. There is a fuse box. Like when something is going to go wrong, that's what we are trying to do. If you want to bring in the power of AI in your business, you need to understand how do you lay out the power? Where is the fuse box? That's the AI governance. And how do you lower the voltage of AI to do things safely? And where there is high voltage, now you need to do a lot more security and governance consideration and those kind of things that need to be done.
Okay. So you also been, not now, a long time ago, you worked at IBM, right? So could you share the most important leadership lessons that you've learned working there? Because obviously IBM, they're like very iconic leaders there.
I learned a lot. IBM is a very large company. So I started my career in a very small startup. I learned a lot. And then the dot-com crashed and everything else. Only the big companies were surviving. I went into IBM. I was there for 8 years, learned a lot, and then joined a startup as well. Biggest learnings were all around how to deal with humans. It's not technology. Technology part is the easy part. It's when you have to achieve a hard goal, the technology will happen if you can get the people who are smart along with you in towards the common goal and make it everybody's success. But he told me, right, success must be shared. Failure you can take on yourself, and that is fine. Protect the other people from failures. So the lessons were, I was in IBM Research, and that's an organization where folks, I was there, and folks like me would think that, oh, we are smart, right? And then the other folks who are not in research just take our ideas and go do it because we are the smarter ones, right? We wrote a paper, and then in this conference, everybody liked it. That's not about that. It's not about whether your idea is smart. I learned it with good guidance, and I had a great mentor, is that it is not about whose idea it is, right? Just make it everybody's idea and connect to solving the customer's problem. It's not about your problem or IBM's problem. It's actually the customer's problem, and make it a joint mission. That will always work. And even when I'm talking about to folks today who are trying to create AI startups and all of that, I say, look, it's not about technology, not that you figured out RAG. Solve a customer's problem. And if the customer is happy, that is all that matters. And then if you give everyone else credit for what the work is there, then you'll be able to create a culture and a team. So it's the main thing I learned is around that leadership is actually about followership. Like how many people would like to follow you? And why will they follow you? They follow you because working with you gives them a better chance at personal success.
Beautiful. So talking about leadership and leaders, is there any leader right now in the AI field that you admire or help you to keep pushing through?
Yeah. AI field, like in general, whether it was AI or not, even before this AI thing, I admire Satya Nadella on what he has done with Microsoft. And that was true even before this AI era has come upon. If you look at Microsoft, it's a 50-year-old company. And Bill Gates was there. He created, brought it to great heights. And then the world was writing them off, like Linux will take over the world. And even me in my previous company, we were like, yeah, let's focus on open source and Linux. And what will Windows do? Windows upgrades used to come once in 18 months, and Linux was iterating very quickly, right? There was Ubuntu, there was Red Hat. But then Satya somehow transformed it. The transformation itself, again, is not the core thing. If you look at the strategy, probably folks could have come up with the strategy. It's all about execution. How do you take such a large ship with so much momentum and then turn it to a point where now you are embracing open source? It's about changing culture and also changing the rate at which things go. Now Microsoft's moving extremely fast. That part is truly admirable. As I was saying, leadership lessons and how do you get people to work with you? This is about changing a fully functioning company to become different. It's like changing wheels in a running car and doing it successfully while preserving the culture and making the company a great company for people to work for. Yeah, that's something to learn.
Yeah. Actually, I hear that from, I hear that many people admire the CEO of Microsoft. Actually, I hear that before. So he must be doing something great though. So Bini, we know that AI and everything and everybody's like, everybody's talking about how it would change the future. But there's something that you said in one of your social posts. And it said, we are at the cusp of making irreversible choices for humanity's future. The good and bad news is that it depends on humans. Would you mind to discuss a little bit about this?
Yes, it's very simple. AI is getting very powerful. We have the choice as to, do we give AI, the powerful AI, direct access to our environment? Or do we keep humans in the middle with a steering wheel? So it's the same question that we have been talking about in self-driving cars. Do you want AI to drive the car and you're just sitting there at the mercy of AI not getting something wrong and crashing, right? Or are you sitting in a self-driving car where there is a steering wheel? If you feel uncomfortable, you can grab it anytime, right? If you don't feel uncomfortable, you can let it run. So that is the choice. Now, the steering wheel exists for the car, but the steering wheel for all the other systems out there does not exist for most of the people in the world, because the steering wheel, if you think about when you're talking about computers, is programming languages. That's how it steers. Now, AI can generate programming like Python, and Python is the steering wheel that can steer your business, right? But who can grab the steering wheel of Python? Only the 30 million developers in the world. So the number of drivers, steering wheel drivers for AI is very few. If AI has to go through a human, that is this risky part. Now, what folks are saying, because they cannot train enough people on Python quickly, and we have tried for a decade. It's only growing 10%, 15% year over year. How many programmers can we create in the world? So the AI folks, some people are saying, you know what, AI will align with humans, it'll become powerful, all that. You don't need some human in the middle. Just let AI connect to your backend systems and do it. That is the scary part, because we haven't even scratched the surface of what AI alignment with human means and what are the ramifications of that. So the other approach, which is what I'm pushing for, and hopefully others are also doing the same, is put more humans on the steering wheel. And the only way you do that is you create a programming paradigm which is natural to all humans. Just like there are a billion car drivers in the world, it's a very important task, not an easy task. But the steering wheel is such a natural thing that people learn it quickly. Same thing, if it's natural language programs, then a billion people will learn it quickly. And then they could say that, yes, AI can drive, but AI will first tell me the program in natural language, and I have the ability to say yes or no to it. That is needed. And then I hope we as a society decide that there will be smart AI with no power to do things directly. And then there'll be a dumb AI, like the 5-voltage AI, that will have power to do stuff, but it can't do that much damage. And humans are sitting in the middle with the steering wheel of this natural language approval process.
Okay, thanks, Bini. I've got one last question for you. What should people early in their careers focus on when trying to learn on how to be effective in using AI?
Yes. So, as I said, the conviction that I had 5 years ago was that AI and humans is going to become quite similar in terms of how you manage them. So programming is going to be the same. So folks need to learn actually leadership early in their career, and they need to learn broader design. whether it's organizational design or it's product design. So the future is about humans will be entrusted with, here are some AI capabilities, you have to get the job done. But managing AI will not be just like normal programming. You will require similar skills, having EQ, just like managing humans requires. And especially, and I'm seeing it with my kids, they are dealing with GPT-5, and which is a lot more knowledgeable, a lot more smarter, and yet you have to somehow instruct it to do something for you. So you need people management skills translated into AI management skills. I would say early in the career, use AI as much as possible and try to build bigger things and see whether you can get there or not, right? It's a matter of, it's almost like horse riding. You've got to just get on the horse and ride it. You cannot read a textbook. Just do it. And the more you do it, the more you will understand the animal. Nobody can describe it for you. You just have to do it.
Okay, thanks, Vini. Thanks very much for, this was a very interesting conversation, I have to say. So thank you very much for making time for this.
Thank you, Flor. Anytime. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.